Hello, everybody. I'm Silva Harapetian. Thanks for joining us for another edition of the Silva Harapetian Show. If you are familiar with this show, I pride myself of bringing on guests who have valuable content to share with you that is going to impact your life. And there is no one better to talk to in these difficult times as we're going through the coronavirus, as we're going through mental health challenges, as we're going through having to pivot in our business, than my dear friend, Aaron Renfrew, who he just reminded me that we met a little bit more than 4 years ago on Miami Beach. He is the author of Turning Point. He is an adventure coach, and he is the creator of Life Unbound. Yes, I have to look up my notes because his qualifications are pretty long, but those are the three things that I really want to mention because I think they're relevant to what we're going to be talking about today. But before I introduce him and bring him on as a guest, I want to show you a little bit about his story. So take a look.
There was multiple times when I tried to turn my life around. That if I cured this thing, if I made more money, if I put myself in a different state of mind, if I was around other people or in a better relationship, I could fix myself. I found excuses when I could, until I had no excuses left, until I had nowhere else to go, until I was stuck in a position where I didn't want to live anymore. I was molested when I was a child. I had forgot about it. As it became more real, the coping mechanisms needed to get stronger. And because the thoughts got stronger. How could your mother let this happen to you? How could they put you in a foster home? Why did they split up? Did they split up because of you? And what I found was the first thing that was there for me and the closest at arm's reach was alcohol and drugs. My name is Aaron Renfrew, and the author of Turning Point. So at 23, I got arrested for possession of cocaine. I took it very seriously. I did get sober. I quit everything for that entire year and a half. I don't think that I was ready to change my life for the positive at that time. I think that I was too young. Things that I was using to self-medicate were no longer working. And the lies that I had told myself were not being treated. And the way that that turned out was this just inward implosion of hatred, self-loathing. It wasn't until the pain reached a point where that change was possible, because it had reached a point where I wanted to die. And, you know, I had a gun in my mouth. And it wasn't until I was 29, 6 years after the first time I got sober, that I really reached a point where I put my foot in the ground. There have been multiple turning points, right? Four different layers of my recovery. The most powerful turning point was listening to this guy speak, and he gets up and proceeds to tell a room full of people how he was molested as a child. And I like almost fell out of my chair. The power is in the truth and the power to tell the truth. Simply taking alcohol or drugs or gambling or infidelity out of the equation, it does almost nothing, because in the moment those things are your medication and they make you feel better about yourself in the moment. So taking them out of the equation is not the answer. Taking them out of the equation and then taking action to fill that void is the answer. You have to do something to feel better about yourself, or you will fall back into old behaviors. First, you start to understand what the problem is. For me, that was having a higher level of faith, right? I walked around with this idea for most of my life that I was somehow in control of everything and that I had to run the show and that anything bad that happened was my fault. For me, it was about creating a life around my passions and around the things that were going to enhance my level of gratitude and my life and my ability to live life on life's terms and be able to handle any situation with ease. Everyone has this battle that they're working out in their mind, and what I found worked for me was focusing on my diet, was focusing on my health, was focusing on my spirituality and my meditation, and then as well addressing and helping other people. Real change requires action. Profound change requires action. Getting from A to B, you have to put one foot in front of the other and go. You know, the way that I live my life today is I just try to do the next right thing. I can motivate you for a minute, but until you have the ability to turn around and look into somebody's eyes that you've changed their life or you've helped them, you can't quantify that in a book. You'll feel better, you look better, and you'll act better, and you'll know that you're worth more.
See, I told you he's got an incredible story, and he's joining us today to talk a little bit about his life, his journey, where he is now, what he's doing, and what he's hoping to do moving forward. Hi, Aaron. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Silva. How are you?
You are a survivor. You have been through adversity, personal battles and personal demons, and you have developed this incredible skill to pick yourself up from where you are, which has been the bottom of the bottom, and then build yourself back up to where you are today. And we have seen and heard so many stories in this past year and a half of people really being challenged in life. Can we talk a little bit about what you say to people when they call you and they're having a hard time?
Yeah, absolutely. It's very common right now. So that's the most common call that I get, is people that are stuck and struggling and really just don't know what the next step is, don't know where to turn. And, you know, I relate to that in many ways just through my life experience. Now, I mean, at sometimes when I'm working with people, it's almost like therapy, but I draw all of my experience from my own past and my own failures. So it's something that I can sympathize with and relate with very well. And I always am able to draw back on my own experience because I went through, you know, quite a sequence of failures, you know, from my teenage years all the way into my late 20s and got sober at 29. The calls I'm getting today are no different from how I felt when I was first getting sober. I felt trapped. I felt stuck. I felt like I wasn't able to get to where I wanted to go at the time. I was the one holding myself back. And right now, the more common one for everybody is, you know, you have what's happening with the coronavirus and the economy, and things are slowed down and certain industries are struggling. And so people feel stuck for that reason. And that's one of the reasons I created Life Unbound, right? So the course itself was to spur people, because I see people are going to get caught flat-footed, right? So the economy is going to come roaring back, and people have been lulled to sleep to a certain degree because they've been stuck inside, and, you know, it feels like it's never going to get going again. And so a lot of what I work with people on when they first come to me is just the realization of what's about to happen. Like, things are about to blossom, and you need to water those plants. Like, you have to have a plan. You have to, now is the time to get unstuck. And, you know, that's the struggle that people are dealing with. It's really just the reframing and changing the mindset, because it's really all about a little bit of faith.
It really feels hopeless, right? A lot of people, I mean, I've been talking to a lot of people, I know you too, but the common word that's been used is hopeless, right? And can't see the light at the end of the tunnel kind of thing, you know. It's very much out of our control, right? So it feels like we can't do anything about it, but you say we can, though, right?
Of course. So after any period of confinement, right, any human being ultimately stops looking for the next way out, right? So if someone's in jail and they've been in there for 20 years, they eventually just, they get comfortable with where they're at, they get complacent, they're no longer looking for a way out, right? Mm. So, and even getting out scares them. So it's the same thing that we're going through now, where we've been somewhat subdued for over a year, right? And so at least most people, some people are out there, you know, running around, but most people are very subdued. And the ones who have been subdued for a certain amount of time, it's very uncomfortable for them to become unsubdued. Like if you're just to open everything up and then pack a restaurant and send a lot of people in there, it would cause a lot of anxiety because people aren't even mentally prepared for normalcy. Yeah. I mean, it's going to take, there's going to be a little bit of a buffer period. And so often I'm working with people on reframing how they're looking at what's about to happen and where they want to go. And simply allowing people to realize that it is possible to get started with what they want to achieve now. And there's a lot of groundwork that you can lay ahead of time that once you're ready, you can move instead of waiting. Because you have to kind of move as an entrepreneur, I'm sure you know, you have to move long before you're ready. You have to move long before what you're even trying to accomplish is feasible. You're almost working on it before it's even visible.
When you say, I just want to kind of simplify this even more. When you say we have to move before we're ready, I kind of understand what you mean, but could you define what that means? Are you talking about mentally move, so visualize ourselves in a better place? Or are you talking about move as in physically create momentum by doing things that sort of keep us sharp and prepared for when things get moving, or even just to raise our energy and raise our spirits? How do you, if I'm at home and I'm listening to you and I'm in this place and I can identify what you're talking about?
At its basal level, when I say you have to move before you're ready, it's because I know you're never going to be ready. You're never going to feel ready. You're never going to ever feel any product you've ever launched, anything I've ever launched, anything I've ever done, any interview I've ever been on. I never felt like I was ready moving into it ever. So if I never moved before I was ready, I wouldn't get anything done. And some people can do it naturally, and others really struggle with it. So back to the example here. If you're in a job and you want to get to here, you first need to start building this dream, and rather than pull the structure down, right? So you have to move before you're even ready to go there. So you would lay the groundwork of, let's write a business plan. What do I need to do to get there? Like making a list of all of the elements it would take to actually make that transition happen and start to put together the foundation to get there, as well as, you know, how does this work in my life? How does it affect the people around me financially? And building a plan to get there. And so everyone I talk to who wants to do something like that, they feel like it's completely impossible, right? And it is hard. Everything is hard, right? So business is hard. Entrepreneurship is hard. At some point, you have to pull a plug or, you know, turn the switch and just commit yourself to going completely on faith, right? So it's like stepping and just hoping that there's something under your foot with every step sometimes, especially when you're first creating something special, like a passion project or something that's uniquely yours, because nobody's done it before. It's something very different.
Or changing the course of your life, or having to make a pivot during, you know, COVID. I mean, so many people have lost their jobs. So many people have had this opportunity to reevaluate where they are, whether it's in their personal life or professional life, and they're at a crossroad, right? And this is an opportunity to pivot. And when you are at a crossroad, this is where you feel paralyzed. You feel stuck. You feel like you don't know which direction to go because you don't have the confidence in your decision-making ability, right? But one of the things that I always say, and I hear this a lot out there too, it's important to realize that wherever you are and however you're feeling, the fact that you're not making a decision is a decision, right? A lot of people find themselves in this space, and then they complain, and then they say they don't know how to get out of it, and they don't know what to do about it. The fear creates the fear holds us back, and it makes us not make a decision because it's safer not to make a decision. But if you realize that not making a decision is a decision, then you're like, whoa, instead of having two decisions, there's three, right? There, I can go right, I can go left, or I can just stay in the middle. And that in itself is a decision. So
yes.
I think you are so well equipped to talk about this because when, you know, by the way, you know, if anybody's interested, Turning Point, I think it's on Amazon and on your website, correct?
It is on Amazon. Yeah. It's on Amazon.
This is what your book is about, right? It's about your journey of being sober, becoming sober, right? And finding a way to put one foot in front of the other when you don't know what tomorrow holds and how hard it's going to be, right?
Yeah. In many ways, yes. And, you know, my book was written for the person who is really struggling, right? So that book, when I wrote it, was written for me shortly before I got sober on June 6, 2009, right? So it's written for a broken human being. Mm. And it's written in such a way that it's, you know, very open and honest and vulnerable about my past and childhood sexual abuse and, like, you know, suicide attempts and things like that. But then also, you know, kind of how I got through that and how I survived that, and then ultimately how I'm able to use that experience to help other people.
What I want to know is that we all go through pain. We all go through failure. We all go through some sort of trauma in our lives. And obviously yours, you know, is unimaginable in so many ways. But there's one thing to become aware and then do the work to heal. It's another to become aware, do the work to heal, and then write a book about it and publicly speak about it. And, you know, I can talk to you about this because I remember working with you as you were preparing your first speech to do your first speaking engagement in front of an audience about this topic. Just full transparency, Aaron and I worked together to figure out which parts of his story belong in that speech and which parts needed to go. But can you
saved me on that. You saved me on that.
Can you remember what that turning point was where you, because that takes so much courage. It takes so much willpower. It takes so much self-confidence. And it takes this tenacity to say, I don't care what you all think about this. This is my truth.
I've had multiple turning points, right? And so,
hence the title of the book, right? So,
yeah, I mean, I've had a few, but the one that specifically is exactly what you're talking about is I was sitting in a room full of other addicts and alcoholics, and, you know, some of them were telling their stories, and somebody stood in front of this room, there's probably 100 people in the room, and, you know, I think I had just gotten sober. I was maybe a month sober, couple months maybe, and you know, this guy, he would always come here and he'd drive a Dodge Viper, so he had this badass sports car, you know, shaved head, tattoo on the back of his head, like, had a beautiful woman, it was like this big bulky dude, like ex-gangster, he just seemed like an interesting cat, like big tough guy, gets up in front of the room and starts talking about how he was molested as a kid. Mm-hmm. But fully confident, fully aware, sitting straight up and just dropping like serious, vulnerable action to over 100 people. This is 12 years ago, okay, when it wasn't popular to be vulnerable for a man. Seeing someone do that allowed me to really internalize that this is possible. Like, I could actually sit up there and do that. And it took me several years to get to that point, right? So you've probably seen me say it before where I don't really love the word vulnerability, because at some point, to me, there's power in it. I no longer feel vulnerable to attack, right? So I turn it into power. And so this is my power. It's my way of helping other people, not a vulnerability for me anymore, right? So that, seeing someone do that, allowed me to really internalize that this is possible. That was the turning point in terms of knowing what was possible and kind of understanding the power that there is in your message, in coming out with that but doing it in a very confident way, no longer allowing it to control you, but you controlling the message to weaponize it, can help other people. You know what I mean? Like, very different mindset around it, right? It's just full-on acceptance, full-on humility around the problem, and a full release of guilt, all the shame, nothing there except acceptance and gratitude that it actually happened and you're able to use it to help somebody else. When I got to that point, that's when I wrote the book, because I realized, like, other people need to be able to do this, because it's just all the power is in being able to share the message to help someone else. And if you, once you're able to get through your own guilt, shame, and remorse around an issue, you can use your issue as power. And I think a lot of people miss it.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not telling you who is watching and listening, or we're not telling you to, you know, put your business out there. That's not what this conversation is about. This conversation is about knowing that there is power in owning your story. There is healing in speaking your truth. There is power in talking about the things that are real for you and your experiences in order to acknowledge them to yourself, and in order for you to level up to a whole other level of yourself. I mean, you can't level up as a human if you actually don't do some of this work. And it looks different for everybody. You know, for Aaron, it was writing a book and publicly talking about it. For me, gosh, nobody can shut me up, right? So I am constantly vocal about everything that has happened in my life, because I think I know the power in our stories. I know the power in my stories. So if I share a bit of information that helps someone go, wow, I see a little bit of myself in this journey, and there is opportunity and light at the end of the tunnel, and that I can survive this, that's the goal. But in reality, it's a truly difficult journey to be on. And part of the reason I talk about these things so much and bring on guests like Aaron to talk about these things is because I also am an Armenian. I live in a minority community. I am an immigrant, and I watch people around me about, you know, there's stigma around who we are. There's stigma around how we move as women. There's stigma about sex. There's stigma about abuse in the past. There's stigma about, you know, domestic violence. There's stigma about everything. There's even stigma around who had COVID and who didn't. And he, right? So yeah. It is important to realize that if you want to live a life that is somewhat rooted in power, you have to take your power back from the things that happen around you to you because of other people. And you have to own your own story and write your own narrative. So anyway, this is for the listeners who are like, how does this apply to me? It applies to everybody. Your story is valid no matter how severe, how extreme, how deep, how shallow, whatever it is, it's yours and it matters. Aaron, I want to talk a little bit about, I mean, you've done so many cool things in your life, okay? Like the transformation you went through from being who you were, addicted and on the brink of suicide, to turning your life around. There's before and after pictures. If you're listening, I highly recommend you go watch this video on YouTube, and you can see the before and after photos of Aaron. And also from that point forward, you've done a lot of traveling, a lot of work on yourself and investing time in building yourself up. And part of what you love to do is go to some really interesting and unique places. And that has led to you actually becoming an adventure coach. What is an adventure coach?
I was working with and coaching executives and working with executives in the workplace. And I really didn't like that. To me, it was very sterile. And so, you know, most of the time in developing restaurants and things like that, working and building teams, in the businesses that I used to be in, I would constantly be in a situation where I was trying to coach an individual who would go from completely nuts, checking emails on the phone, texting, and then he'd sit down with me for 1 hour. And then the second I get up, they're back to whatever they're doing. And I wanted something with more depth. I wanted an approach with more depth.
Can you tell our listeners and viewers, what does an adventure coach do?
Sure. So For an example, my most recent trip, I went to Big Bend, which is in the desert of South Texas, so high mountain desert of South Texas, and did a trek 5 nights, 6 days with an individual, who was struggling and wanted to get out of and change his life. He wanted to get out of the mess he was in and change his entire life, right? So his sister hired me to come and take him on an adventure trek. And every day we work on personal development, growth, mindfulness, you know, health and wellness. Obviously, there's a lot of fitness going on during the trek. It's incredibly challenging. But the real benefit here is you're kind of pulled away from everything that is your comfort zone. Mm-hmm. And my experience is that with adventure coaching, when someone is pulled well outside their comfort zone, they're much more adaptable. They're much more willing to change, and they're very open. And a huge component of any type of change is being, number one, honest with yourself, but having a willingness and an open-mindedness to actually enact the change and absorb it. And so I found that when I was able to work with someone for 3 or 4 days in a row, way outside of our comfort zone, where they didn't just jump right back into work or back into emails and the noise of everyday life, they made dramatic changes. And so instead of working with someone for 6 months, 1 hour every couple of weeks, to me it makes a lot more sense to do 4-day intensive, like life-changing experience. And then, you're coming back with a set plan for your life, not just really slow incremental growth. I always found it was 2 steps forward and 1 step back with slow incremental growth. Mm-hmm. Adventure coaching is really for, bold change. Like, I want to go in a new direction kind of thing.
Right. I'm stuck. I'm paralyzed. I need to go. So it's funny we talk about this because, in 2019, gosh, it feels like so long ago. In 2019, I found myself in that situation, right? I found myself paralyzed and stuck and not knowing what to do or where to go. And I know just from my own experience and my own life, anytime that I've had to make a drastic and dramatic change, obviously you don't want to do it because you're human and you always revert back to the comfort zone. The only way to actually turn the ship around is like commit to turning the ship around. And the way I did that is I bought a one-way ticket to Europe. I don't know if you remember or not, but was like, I'm going to go. I'm going to put myself in uncharted territory, unfamiliar places without a plan. And I know myself well enough that I'll figure it out. But that jolts and bolts the system into creating new environment. Creating a new environment creates new habits, creates new ways of thinking. It almost like fires a whole other section of your brain, right? I don't know what the neurology is behind it, but it actually works when you change your environment. There is a significant change that happens with that. So if you're ever feeling like you're stuck and you can't mentally make a change, you may want to, one of the things that a lot of people recommend, and I know this probably has something to do with your adventure coaching too, is that changing your environment is one of the ways to actually really create change, right?
Yeah, of course. And look, I call it getting outside your comfort zone, but in reality, you mentioned the neuroscience. To me, when people are stuck inside their comfort zone for very long, like for long periods of time, and right now people have been stuck in their comfort zone for a long time, right? At least. But the longer you're in there, the more fearful you become of the outside world, right? Mm-hmm. The more fearful you become of things that don't even exist, these scenarios you run in your mind, these things that, you worry about intensify.
Right.
And when you're able to travel, get outside yourself, do something exciting like a one-way trip to Europe, everything becomes expanded, right? So it's not just you're outside your comfort zone. It's like, okay, I actually have to have faith that things are going to work out. And you see more colors, like you hear better, your senses become awakened, right? Your smells, everything changes, right? So it's not just a small change. Whereas if you're stuck, in your comfort zone all the time, you succumb to, the itty bitty shitty committee in the head, and it will talk to you and tell you things that are just not true. When you're out adventuring, exploring, you're in a profound state of presence almost the entire time, especially like out in nature, walking through a city or walking through Paris or whatever. You are fully immersed in the moment.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to be in the moment when you're deep inside your comfort zone sitting on your couch.
Yeah. And
you're
another
always going to be outside yourself.
Yeah. Another good way of describing this is, you know, our thoughts are the most powerful thing that happens in our lives, right? Everything starts and ends with our thoughts. And if you find yourself not being able to control your thoughts, you know, I found myself really being challenged, and it's such a sort of vulnerable thing for me to say, because I pride myself on being able to, you know, have control over where my energy is going and where my thoughts are going. But when you go through what I went through and trauma and just something dramatic in your life, sometimes you really can't control where your thoughts are going. And when you are in that space that continuously perpetuates that negative thought pattern, you have to create a situation where that thought pattern is interrupted. And that's exactly, you know, when you said, you know, you see things and colors become, and you have to stay focused. That's exactly what it was. For me, I had to interrupt my thought pattern, my consistent thought pattern that was negative, that was not conducive or productive to my life. So putting myself in a scenario where I have to consistently on a daily basis figure out where I am, what I'm going to do, what language people are speaking, what train do I need to take, right? That interrupts, that forces the interruption of the thought pattern. So that doesn't mean I don't think about the thing that is hurting me or has traumatized me or that I'm going through, but it's less of it.
All of that I agree with. So, I mean, to me, you can take it a step further too, right? Like, depending on what you're doing, especially when you come back from creating or crafting your own mission through Europe, whatever it is it entails, you come back with a greater sense of not only individuality, but
confidence,
self-esteem.
Confidence. We said the same thing.
Yes. Come back like feeling like, okay, like I get this a lot from people, right? They're very, they sit there in fear oftentimes. And when you get them outside, they're like, I've had people that are just terrified, and I get them out in nature and have them doing crazy stuff, and they're completely fine. And they don't realize that they've been fearing nothing all along. Like, it's all in their head.
Right.
And once they're in the situation, it's fine. And so many people resist stepping outside what they're used to. And then the second they step outside what they're used to, they realize, oh, man, this is, like, really not that bad, and I actually enjoy it.
Yeah. You know, obviously, adventure coaching involves you know, a physical activity, because you're essentially going out into nature, and most of the time there is no phone, no internet, no none of that, and you're hiking or biking or whatever it is that you're doing. There's always some sort of a physical component attached to this. But I know that you are really big on yoga and meditation and sitting still, and talk to me a little bit about the power of that, because that seems to be sort of the opposite of adventure, right? But it does fit into it. Talk to me about that.
I just found an incredible spot to come up and meditate. There's a group of people down there. You can probably see that there's a path down that way. But I climbed up this rock here. You can see the view is just incredible. There's glaciers behind me and mountains.
In August, I'm going to do another Peru retreat trek. So the one got canceled last year because of coronavirus. So I'm rescheduling for this August to do the Peru. It's called the Cordillera Whitewash. It's 86 miles, high elevation, very challenging. But when you're doing something like that, you're incredibly grounded in the present. You're light years away from a cell phone or a cell phone tower or the ability to communicate outside of your small group, right? And you have somewhat forced reliance and trust around those who are closest to you. And when you get into a state of presence like that, it's so simple to transition that into doing meditation on the side of a mountain. Because literally all you have to do is sit down and you're already in a state of presence. You do a couple of breaths And a guided meditation in an atmosphere like that is profound.
How did that trip change you? I never asked you that question. I know you went and you were gone for a while. I saw the incredible pictures. And obviously, if you're listening to this on a podcast or a radio show, I highly recommend you watch this on YouTube, because we are sharing Aaron's pictures and his journey on this interview. It was incredible to watch and sort of be there with you vicariously without actually doing the trek, right? But how did that change you, someone who's already sort of tapped in, sharing, meditating all the time, active?
There's a lot to learn about life through high altitude trekking and trekking in general. Just in the simplicity of it, there's so many lessons that we carry over. And this is like whenever I'm working with someone, we're trekking up a mountain. Like, for example, like when you're going up a large mountain, you should try not to like look at the top. You should look at where you're walking and just one step at a time. And then you wind up making it up there pretty fast without all the pain. But if you keep looking up, you're constantly like, oh my God, look how far that is. I can't make it that far. My bag is so heavy. But if you're just looking right in front of you, you don't think like that. It's just different. And it's the same is true of business and, you know, building a business and going through the struggle of everyday life. I think when you do something that is that challenging, you come back with a different idea of what you're actually capable of in other areas of your life. Mm. Right? So it certainly forced me to widen my horizon as to what I thought adventure coaching could be, as to what I thought my business could be financially and otherwise. When you do something incredibly challenging and you finish it, right, and then you're like, that really wasn't so bad. What other areas of my life are like that? And it carries over to a lot of what other people and myself would consider unattainables, right? So there are certain things that, and I've struggled with this through my whole life, where I was like, that's maybe for other people, but, you know, I'm never going to be, you know, rich, or I'm never going to be famous, or I'm never going to be this or that. And the fact of the matter is, like, other people have done those things. And so why not me? Why can't I do it? And it's the same. And so if that trek changed me in some way, it certainly helped me with stepping into my ability and into my power and understand, like, everything that I do and everything I try and do is to try and push myself a little bit further as to what my capabilities are, as to new and exciting experiences and what I think is possible for myself, and trying to translate that to other people too when we're doing it together.
Thank you very much for joining us and sharing so much of yourself and your stories and guiding many of us who are challenged with a lot of things during these times, whether it be professional or personal. I hope that somebody out there heard something powerful and helped them sort of have a different perspective on what they're going through. Aaron is accessible and available to everyone. Find him on social media. I will make sure to put all of his links and all of the information you need about his book, about his adventure coaching, about Life Unbound, which is an online course that you can take. So, you know, those of you who are like, well, I don't have the capacity or the ability or the money to do an adventure coaching, there is the option for you to do some of the work right there in your living room at your own capacity and your own pace. So he's made that available to anyone who wants to change their life and level up. So if you have any questions, reach out to him. In the meantime, Aaron, thank you for spending some time with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Silva. It's wonderful to see you, as always.
Good to see you, too. And you're listening to the Silva Haropetyan Show. I'll see you on the next episode. I'm Silva Haropetyan. We talk ordinary people, extraordinary stories, living life on their own terms.